We welcome in July, as well as two new computers here at the MyMac Labs.
We talk to Alex Fielding.
It's podcast number 89, MyMac.com.
The next generation of radio, it's the MyMac.com podcast. Podcasting from the MyMac.com studios, it's your hosts, Tim Robertson and Chad Perry.
And it's a warm day, the first week of July here at MyMac Podcast Headquarters.
Yep, but not as warm as most July days.
No.
It's been pretty comfortable today.
Actually, yeah, it has. Chad and I are going to, later in the show, open up our two new toys.
Yeah.
Chad got a MacBook, and I got a MacBook Pro.
Merry Christmas!
So, and we haven't even taken them out of the boxes yet. They're still sitting on the floor behind us.
Yep.
Oh, I thought, you know, it'd be kind of cool to open them up while we're recording the podcast. Mm-hmm. And kind of, I've got my G4 PowerBook right here, so I can compare it directly to it. Not speed or anything like that. We don't have time to
get them charged up and booted up.
Yeah, yeah. And actually use them much. But right. I mean, just a physical comparison. Mm-hmm. And Chad's got his 900 megahertz G3 iBook right here, and he'll be able to compare that with, he got the white iBook.
Yep.
Or, see, iBook, there I go white again. MacBook. So, you know, we'll check them out and see. And I will say this, the boxes that they come in are a whole lot thinner than they used to be. They used to be great big boxes, and now they're not much thicker than the computer's inside, really.
And you know, the box for the MacBook still weighs less than a laptop I use for work, which is in, what is that one? Oh, it's a Dell.
It's a Dell.
A Dell Inspiron, or Inspiron.
Inspiron.
Yeah. And it weighs, yeah.
It weighs.
It's got some heft to it.
It does something. I did a interview today with, not a job interview, the other kind of interview, with Small Dog Electronics.
Yeah?
Their podcast should be out probably this Friday, I think. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be like a 10-minute interview, and I think we ended up talking close to a half hour, so.
Wow.
And it was Ed, and it was Don over at Small Dog, and we talked about a little bit of my Mac history, and a little bit of the podcast, a little bit of the video cast that we've done. They had really good questions. Ed asked a question that I found insightful, and he said, "Now you guys do a lot of product reviews. Have you ever run into the situation where you give a product a bad score, and there's been," I said, "like repercussions?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "Yes, that has happened in the past."
Mm-hmm.
And I gave him two examples, both digital cameras. John Nemirovsky did a review of a digital camera. Oh, a couple years back now. I cannot remember what it was. I can't remember the manufacturer, and I can't remember the camera. But he gave it a real low score, like 1 out of 5 or 2 out of 5, really low.
Mm.
But he actually posted pictures taken of the same scene from his digital camera and this digital camera, the reviewed one. And it was clearly not as good. I mean, a layman could see that with their own eyes, that, ooh, one camera doesn't look half as good as this one.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave it a low score, and the company was pretty upset. And they basically told John, "We will never send a camera to MyMac.com again for review." Mm. And we went, well, that happens.
Yeah.
Now, the flip side of that is, I gave HP a negative review on one of their cameras. I think I gave it like a 1.5 out of 5. I mean, it was... And I even said in the review, I can't believe this has the HP brand name on it, because usually HP stuff is really good.
Right.
And they read it, and they took it to heart, to the point that some of the engineers actually emailed me asking for suggestions and what did I think, more specifically, was wrong with the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And that showed me a company who takes criticism the way it should be taken. Learn from it.
Right.
Make the products better in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent me another camera almost immediately after that. I scored a 4.5 out of 5 because it was such a good camera.
Right.
So that's the dichotomy between a company who, when you deal with them, you're only dealing with their PR company.
Mm-hmm.
And all they care about is that. Compared to HP, where their engineers were contacting me, trying to get some more feedback. Because they care about the product.
Right.
So, I got to give proper respect to HP in that regard. Mm-hmm. That's the way you should do it.
Right, and we've had, you know, mixed reviews on more than one vendor. I mean, I can think of stuff we've done for, like, Griffin, where I give them a good score on one thing and a bad score on another.
Yeah, you know, it's not...
And we aren't trying to be nasty about it. We're just saying this is not the kind of quality
well, we,
I expect.
We give reviews from the standpoint of we're writing for our reader.
Right.
We don't write reviews to help out a company.
No.
That's fine. If they make a great product and our review helps sell an extra million units, mm-hmm. great for them. Uh-oh.
Pardon me.
Half a sneeze.
Half a sneeze.
Suppressed. So that's great if that helps them.
Yep.
By the same token, if we give a review and it's horrible, I don't mean horribly written, I mean, you know, it's a 1 point.
Yeah,
nothing,
it's a low score.
Yeah. And it doesn't help them, that's fine too. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll learn from it. But it's up to us to educate other potential buyers. Mm-hmm. That's what a review is for.
And that's what you go online looking for reviews for to begin with. I mean, whenever we're going to go make a big purchase decision, my wife and I, she does all the research on the internet and looks at Amazon.com, looks at other people who reviewed the particular piece of equipment and says, okay.
Yeah, is this good or not?
Is this good or not?
For instance, video games. You know I'm a pretty big video game user. And I mentioned just a couple weeks ago that I got the Xbox 360 now. Mm-hmm. Did I mention that on the podcast?
Yeah.
I've only got one game for it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got to buy another game for it eventually. So I'm looking online. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do a search for the best Xbox 360 game.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's all marketing crap. Oh, this is right. The best game, blah, blah, blah. But the more I got into it and reading some of the magazines that I have, mm-hmm. Oblivion 4 has been described as one of the best or one of the first must-have games for the Xbox 360. Mm-hmm. So that's the one I bought. Based on the reviews, in the professional mm-hmm. reviewers' opinion in the magazines,
right.
and user feedback on the internet,
mm-hmm.
that's the one I picked.
Yep.
And I feel confident about that. I bought it used off eBay because it came with the game
mm-hmm.
and with the strategy guide.
Ooh.
So I'm like, bonus. And it's still and I still saved like $15 than if I went and bought it new at Best Buy or wherever. Without the strategy guide, which is another $15 at least.
Yep.
So... You know, I feel confident about that purchase because I read reviews first, just like mm-hmm. your wife does. So that's what our reviews are for. It's to help the end user, you guys listening to this,
mm-hmm.
get the most for your money. If you have a choice between two products, and we give one a really good review and one a really bad review,
mm-hmm.
we're hoping you're going to spend the money on the one that got the really good review because
right.
obviously that's a company who cares about their customers mm-hmm. and cares about their product. And that's what it's all about.
Yep.
We do have an interview scheduled here in a little bit, so we're going to take a quick break. Let's listen to a Dashboard Minute.
Okay.
And when we get back, we're going to do an interview. Before we get out of here, I just want to say that where did we get these portable computers back here, Chad?
Small Dog Electronics.
See, now they don't just advertise with us.
Mm-hmm.
We are customers of smalldog.com.
That's right.
Chad wanted a MacBook. I wanted a MacBook Pro. There was never a question where we were going to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Ordered it last week. Came today. It would have been here yesterday, but yesterday was an American holiday, so you know, had the extra day. And we actually bought a third one and sent that to another person, and that was delivered, I saw, today on UPS's tracking site. So not only do we advertise smalldog.com, we buy from them. And we do for a reason. So if you're looking for a new Mac, new iPod, new printer, new digital camera...
Refurbished Mac, refurbished iPod.
almost anything you could think of, including software, check out smalldog.com.
Hey man, you're listening to the Dashboard Minute on the MyMac.com podcast. Happy trails to all, and I hope you're having a delightful summer. I'm currently just back from vacation, but I couldn't resist trying to get out a Dashboard Minute under less than ideal circumstances. Many might ask what possible difference that might make, and I would have to reply that I have no idea. Regular Dashboard users know all about the many internet search type widgets that are available and probably have their dashboard dock littered with them. David Richmond from the redwork.org site most likely thought that there were way too many, so he did what most people would do in such a situation. He made another one. But not just any search widget, it's the Jack widget, which is short for Jack of All Widgets. David made his widget, which doesn't look too different from any other search widget, a little different. Instead of just one service or information request possible, he included over 24 that you can choose from a drop-down menu. Shopping, information, people, facts, it's all here. And if you go to the redwork.org site, there's some information on how to add even more. If you don't ever want to bother, though, you're in good shape since the Jack widget will most likely cover darn near every topic you might be interested in. Find this widget at all the usual sources, including the author's website at redwork.org. The second widget for today is one that is perfect for people on vacation like I was. One thing I never want to worry about when on vacation is exactly what time it is at any given point. However, it is occasionally a good idea to have some clue to how close it is to the half hour or hour or such, or how much time it will be until some important date. For just such an occasion, I present to you the Clockish widget. What this widget does in very loose terms is tell you what time it is. Like, if it was 6:05 in the evening, it might say, it's a little after 6. Or something like, it's almost 9:45 some hour or a little before some other hour. The point is that the widget never gives you exactly what time it is. Handy for when you don't really want to know exactly what time it is. The other thing this widget does is allow you to set a target date, and it will let you know in unspecific general terms how long it will be until the date arrives. I have mine set for next Christmas, so it tells me it's a little more than 5 months away. Perfect for a slacker like me. Find this widget at the Apple Dashboard download site and at the author's website at www.tacowidgets. Yeah, I'm not kidding. Tacowidgets.com. I think I need to set the Clockish widget to let me know how long it will be until my next vacation. In the meantime, as always, if you have a favorite widget you would like me to talk about, I can be contacted via email at dbminute@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join me again next time on the Dashboard Minute on the MyMac.com podcast.
Thank you very much, Guy. And for those wondering, I spoke a while back about possibly splitting apart the podcast, taking the segments and putting them into a show all on their own.
Yep.
And we're still looking at that. In fact, David Cohen said he may have an idea for a segment as well. And that would be cool.
Yeah, it would be cool.
So we're still looking at that possibility. To be honest, I'm leaning more and more towards that way. Which reminds me, Chad, before I leave tonight, I want to get the second microphone from you.
Yep.
So I could take that home, that way I can do intros.
Got it.
We do have a bunch of Mac news that we want to go through. However, if the telephone rings in the middle of the news, we're obviously going to pause the podcast to conduct an interview.
Yes. So,
but that's only if our interviewee calls.
Yeah.
Let's jump right into the news. News from MacMinute.com this week. July 5th, Apple introduces the $899 education configuration for iMac. Apple today announced a new $899 configuration of the 17-inch iMac designed specifically for the education customers, featuring a 1.83 GHz Intel Core Duo processor, a built-in iSight video camera with iLife 06, the next generation of Apple's suite of digital lifestyle applications.
The 17-inch iMac for education is available immediately and will replace the eMac, Apple's last CRT-based computer, providing students and teachers everything they need to learn and create in today's digital classroom, all in the ultra-efficient iMac design, notes Apple. Built-to-order options and accessories include up to 2 GB DDR SD RAM, 160 GB serial ATA hard drive, iWork 06 pre-installed, Apple remote, and Apple USB modem.
So it's nice to know that Apple has a replacement to the eMac, and they're just kind of repositioning a cheaper iMac to fill that role.
Mm-hmm.
That's good, though. Apple definitely doesn't want to give up on the education market. I think that would be a huge, huge mistake on their part. Even though Microsoft and MTV has created more MTV Networks content has been added to iTunes. Apple today said that it would, today being June 29th, by the way, that it would expand the amount of Viacom's MTV Networks television shows it sells on the iTunes Music Store, reports MarketWatch.
The company will offer episodes of MTV's Viva La Bam.
Horrible.
TV Land's sit-down comedy with David Steinberg.
Never saw it.
And Spike TV's Blade the Series.
I DVR'd that, and I'm about 15 minutes into the series premiere of that. Mm. So far, I like it.
For $1.99 each. Apple said it now offers episodes of more than 150 TV shows and has sold more than 1 million episodes of the Comedy Central series South Park since launching the video service in late 2005. Apple shares rose 52 cents to $56.50.
I did see, and I don't think I've got this on our... no, I don't. Apple actually released Blade, the series premiere, two-hour special, free. You can download the first episode for free.
Really?
I think that is so smart. Any network that wants to try to get a new show out there and get it some word of mouth, release an episode or two for free on the iTunes Music Store. People will download it. It's free and watch it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what happened to the Americanized version of The Office.
Right.
That was on the verge of cancellation. And then all of a sudden it comes out on iTunes and everybody started buying it.
Mm-hmm.
iTunes literally saved The Office. It did. Yeah. There's no question. There's no debate. iTunes saved The Office.
Yeah. By the way, I did finally see the iPod episode.
That was pretty good, wasn't it? Yeah. I like that show. I actually rented the DVD of the second season of the British version, which I kind of like a little better, but I didn't get to watch them all. I just borrowed it from the library and I watched two episodes of season two. I like it, and you can see where the characters were based on.
Yeah.
But I'm more used to the Americanized version at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good show. I like it.
Yeah.
Apple, on June 29th, released iTunes 6.05.
Apple today released iTunes 6.0.5 on the web via its software update utility. Of this release, the company says, with iTunes 6, you can now preview, buy, and download music videos, short films, and hit TV programs in the iTunes Music Store and sync your music and purchase videos with iPod to enjoy on the go.
iTunes 6.05 allows you to sync your Nike and iPod workout data to NikePlus.com, where you can easily track your progress, set training goals, blah, 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 blah. And Nike has their own little podcast that you can download. Note, after purchasing music from the iTunes Music Store with iTunes 6 or later, you also need to upgrade your other computers for the purchase music of the iTunes Music Store, so you have the latest version on all your machines, otherwise ain't gonna work.
Yep.
The French lawmakers approved iTunes law.
Lawmakers in France today gave their final approval to new legislation that could potentially force Apple to open up its iTunes DRM software to rival music players, reports the Associated Press.
We are here, open up, we demand. Open, open!
Both the Senate and the National Assembly, France's lower house, voted in favor of the copyright bill, which some analysts said could cause Apple Computer Incorporated and others to pull their music players and online download stores from France, notes the story. The vote was the final legislative step before the bill becomes law, barring the success of a last-ditch constitutional challenge filed last week by the opposition socialists.
Damn socialists! Wait a minute, wouldn't the socialists be the ones that would want this to be an open standard?
In our country, they would be.
Yeah, I guess maybe the definition of socialists in France is different than they are in the United States.
It could be.
Or they just have a different agenda.
Mm.
But I thought socialist was the agenda. I don't know. On, let's see, Apple released an update to the iPod, so go check that out. And it fixes several bugs, and it adds support for the Nike Plus iPod.
Yep.
Yeah, which I'll never, ever use.
And finally, our last little news bit comes from our friends, the Mac Companion. This is their...
Remember, we had Robert Pritchett on the show a while back, and it was a great interview. It was nice talking to him, and something cool is going on over there.
Yep. for the fourth anniversary of the Mac Companion, they are having a huge giveaway.
Cool.
So if you listen to the Mac Review Cast, episodes 61 and 62, you can hear all the prizes that are available. You can hear how to enter into the drawing. And by all means, sign up. They will be taking the drawing, I believe, July 8th is when they will be taking the final drawing, so you can still get in there and listen to Tim Verporten, Jeff Powell, Trent Armstrong, and Robert Pritchett.
I wonder if we're eligible to win anything. I want to win stuff.
Yeah, I know.
We always give stuff away. We never get to win
anything.
You
got a MacBook Pro.
Well, I know, but still.
We didn't win it, though.
I didn't win it. So that's the news this week. Another one of our sponsors, Inatech.com, obviously are the people that host our server.
Yep.
They're also the ones that, because that's where our servers are pushing our podcast out for the world to hear, which is very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, we don't have any problems. It's always fast. It's always reliable.
Yep.
We've tried Libsyn a few times, and I've had complaints
mm-hmm.
that people only got part of the show.
Yeah.
No reason why. They just didn't download the whole show for whatever mm-hmm. reason. And this will be our interview, so let's pause for a minute. And that, of course, was that's when we conducted the interview that we'll put in the show here in a few minutes.
Yep. But we're going to go on about Inatech real quick.
Yeah.
We have been very happy with their service, as yep. we've said before.
Another company that we would like to speak of for just a minute is Ramjet.
Yep.
Chad and I both got brand new laptop computers, mm-hmm. and you know one of the first things we're going to have to do is get new, or well, not new, but more RAM for them, because
that's true.
The more RAM you got in your computer,
the
obviously,
faster it runs.
Yeah, it's going to be more stable. You can run mm-hmm. more applications at the same time.
Yep.
RAM is the most important upgrade for your computer, and if you want to get good RAM, go to ramjet.com.
And get good prices.
Good prices and good RAM. You know, I've seen all too often people having computer problems that's traced directly to some third-party crappy RAM.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that more times than I can count.
Yep.
In fact, the company that I'm freelancing in right now, mm-hmm. they've got a G5 sitting there. Every bank is completely full of RAMs, but it keeps having kernel crashes.
Mm-hmm.
We know that it's RAM.
Yep.
How are you going to track that down? Because the kernel crashes and panics don't happen every minute. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it could run for a couple of days before it happens.
Right.
It's literally, and all the RAM passed the tests.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you figure out which one? It's trial by error. It's pulling yeah. this out and, you know, seeing how it runs.
Mm-hmm.
Ramjet has good RAM. And if you have problems with their RAM, they're going to take care of you. So
yep.
go to ramjet.com. And thank you, Ramjet and Inatech and smalldog.com for sponsoring this podcast. Let's listen to a Robert Pritchett speedy review. Take it away, Robert.
Good morning, campers. Boy, do I have a product for you today. It's a pair of bookshelf speakers made by Audio Engine, and the product model number is the A5. Let me tell you, the first time I plugged my iPod into this device, I was just blown away. The sound quality that comes out of these speakers is amazing. In fact, I was truly shocked that this quality of audio was being produced from my iPod. The A5 speakers retail for $350, and at that price range, they do give the Apple Hi-Fi a good run for its money. Unlike the Apple Hi-Fi, you can't take these speakers to the beach. It doesn't have a place to put batteries, nor does it have handles for carrying. However, it does have some significant advantages over the Apple Hi-Fi. For one thing, it's not one single unit. So because it's a pair of speakers housed in their own separate cabinets, you really do get true stereo sound. Did I mention that sound was amazing? One other advantage that the A5s have over the Hi-Fi is they have a little power port in the back that allows you to plug in Apple's AirPort Express, and it also has a little line right in the back of the speaker so you can plug the AirPort directly into the speakers, allowing you to control the speakers from just about anywhere. You think Apple would have thought of that, don't you? The only thing the A5s is missing that I wish it did have was a dock connector. But you know, that's completely forgivable too, because they did put on the very top of the unit a little USB port, which allows you to connect your iPod and keep it charged while you're listening to your music. Oh, and that also means that you do have to connect your iPod via a mini headphone jack. But again, nothing to worry about there because they supply you with all the cables you could possibly need. So there you have it. Audio Engines A5s. I highly recommend them, and if I was to give them a star rating, it would be a definite 5 out of 5. Thanks for listening. This has been Robert at MyMac.com with another speedy review.
And we are here with Alex Fielding of www.waz.org/Alex. Alex, well, among other things, has worked for DEC, Cadence, Cisco, and Apple Computer to start with. How are you doing, Alex?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Excellent.
Apple Computer? Are they still around?
You know, I heard about them. The logo things, though.
Yes, that's right.
When I was there, it was still 6 colors.
You know, I prefer the 6-color logo to this day.
Well, I got one tattooed on, so I must have liked it better.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you, and why would anybody care that we're interviewing you?
Well, you know, it's been a slow news week, and since Superman was a bomb, I guess I'm the next best thing. I mean, do you really need a better reason?
No, absolutely not. Now, the last time we heard from you was...
You know, Report.com might be an interesting thing to talk about, but...
Can you talk about it, though?
Well, that was just it. I really can't, so I guess I kind of narrowed that one out, too.
So how much longer does the period of silence last?
Well, how long was Spindler running Apple? That was a long, dark period, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Well, see, we don't talk about that anymore.
No, we don't.
I think that the Ripcord silence phase is going to end probably in the next 2 weeks. We're very, very close to making some announcements, but... We have put off making announcements for 3 years.
Wow.
And that either means we're doing something right or we're doing something wrong. I'd like to think we're doing something right.
Hmm. Now, well, I had nothing there. I don't know what I was going for. I just had a complete... I keep looking at the new MacBook Pro in the box behind me, and I keep thinking, ooh, shiny new computer back there I have to open. No.
Oh, thank God it wasn't a woman.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't be talking if that was the case.
Hang on, honey, you're going to talk to Alex.
Oh, my God. Ripcord's been a real adventure. I think it's interesting because every 4 to 6 months, a new rumor pops up in the Mac rumor mill about what Ripcord's doing. And we have been more than willing to feed the rumor mill one red herring every 6 months. I'm not sure when Wired News picked it up a couple years ago, what they were thinking we were going in to do, but they have somehow mistaken Ripcord with AquaCore. And AquaCore, you know, it's three of the five same people on the board.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to confuse. And it's amazing how many times I get called a month now saying, would you be interested in looking at this company that we're doing? No. I'm not AquaCore. Really?
AquaCore.
That was actually a funny time. Gil called me and said, Alex, I really want to go do this company, and how do you feel about me taking two of your board members with me? And I kind of said, well, good. What are you going to go do? Can I come? No, you can't come. Nobody knows who the hell you are.
Now, the last time I heard about you at all was on This Week in Tech.
Oh, Twit. Yeah, Twit. That was great. I was the uninvited Twit guest. I think that Twit episode has gone down in infamy for me comparing censorship in China to watching my parents have sex.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got a little flame for that, I'm sure.
I got some very negative emails after that. I actually had to put a survey page up on my website so that for people who were annoyed by episode 40, they could just hit the submit button and go to the trash can.
That's great. You know you're doing something right when you...
That was not a setup. We were, Waz and I were in Vegas for something totally different, and Waz had a schedule to split. We could not get into our hotel in Vegas. I mean, we just couldn't. There was a line out the door to check in. So Steve looks at me and says, well, God, I got to do this podcast. You know, where am I going to go? So So we said, well, let's go somewhere where it's quiet and where we can get some broadband. So let's go to Starbucks. And we tell the cab driver, take us to a Starbucks off of the strip, because there was a bunch of conferences in town at the time, and, you know, someplace quiet, but it has to be a Starbucks off the strip. No problem, Mom. I ain't going to take you there. Okay, good. We end up in this cab. 10 minutes later, we're at the Starbucks. We're sitting outside getting set up for this twit, and I hear this voice in the background, Fielding, what? And it's Kevin driving in. He's like, what are you doing at my Starbucks?
Kevin being
your Starbucks.
Kevin being Kevin Mitnick.
That was an interesting. That was really interesting. The part of it that I thought was the most interesting, and it didn't get picked up on the microphone, was that while we were sitting around the table for TWIP, there was this bum going by asking everybody for $5, and we actually kind of thought it got picked up because we were laughing about it, and I think everybody just thought we were schizophrenic. But this bum is going table to table outside the restaurant. We're wearing headsets with microphones, you know, little USB headsets.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy is, you know, do you have $5 for a cup of coffee? And nobody thinks it's unusual that you need $5 to get a cup of coffee at Starbucks. You know, he's a Vegas bum, you know?
That's funny.
It was really an interesting interview.
Now, I was asked to definitely ask you about your reprimand letter from Exodus.
Oh my God! I don't know who you talk to, but I should definitely shoot them. I was actually given multiple written warnings at Exodus for bad jokes. They sent me through management retraining so many times that people that worked for me would walk by my office, and every time I would get a management retraining certificate, they would number it. So I think I got up to about number 5. But the good news is if you ask me anything about Exodus Communications, I could give you the stock answer probably by heart now. But they actually wrote me up for telling a bad joke at an off-site Christmas party that someone considered so offensive that they considered it sexual harassment.
Oh, jeez.
And here's the real irony. The off-site Christmas party wasn't paid for by the company, wasn't on company property. I was paying for it, and we were having a lot of margaritas. And the person who decided to complain was somebody that I was in the process of having fired. So it was really entertaining. But the HR panel summons me and our COO at the time to go and review this. And they say, you know, she's in this book, and she starts flipping through the pages, and she says, do you remember telling a bad joke on December the 23rd of 2000? Well, yeah, it's May, but I mean, it could have happened. Sure, you know, it was 5 months later. Yeah, I could have told a bad joke. And I don't think I should really tell you what the joke was, because it'll probably just get me more hate mail. But, you know, to cut a long story short, I asked her if she remembered what the punchline was, which really irritated her, and got our COO to slam his foot into mine. And they ended up documenting the whole thing in this written warning, so I had them write in the written warning the joke with the punchline. So when I finally got it, I highlighted it, framed it, and put it outside my office door, since it was now a company document.
Yeah,
that's an official company document on stationery.
It was great. I mean, Exodus was good times. Not many people remember that Alan Hancock was the first person that Steve Jobs fired when he came back.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Which is ironic, because I had lunch with Dominic Trumport, who was the CFO of Next, who was basically running Next for Steve when the whole merger happened. And Dominic basically said, you know, it's amazing that Ellen was the first one to go when she was the one that was really in support of doing not necessarily the merger of the two companies, but certainly doing something with Next event.
Hmm.
Because that was... You know, that was not a controversial decision at all. That was, Ellen had already killed Rhapsody by then.
Yep.
Which Rhapsody, boy, it sure does sound a lot like Windows Vista at this point, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of similarities there, definitely. And unless Microsoft's careful, it looks like they're kind of heading down that same path.
I'm beginning to wonder, you know, with Bill Gates, it's just him looking around at some of the Vista demos and betas and going, that's it, we're out.
Well, you know, they stripped out so many of the key features that were the big selling points of Vista just 2 years ago. Almost, like 80% of those features are now gone. Just gone. So what's the compelling reason for anybody to even want Vista at this point? The glass look?
Do you think that they're ever going to get it so that when you use mouse on a PC, it doesn't give that kind of a jaggedy, jittery feel that, you know, they've had since Windows 3?
I mean, that
that would seem like a really big selling point. I see all the time. I mean, not as my main machine, but, you know, there's one application, XP, and I'll use it on virtual PC or on Vio, but the mouse is just, it's like this foreign object on the screen.
Yes.
I don't understand. I keep on hoping that at some point the Linux guys or, you know, the Darwin guys are going to sit somebody down at Microsoft and go, look, this is how you do it.
I've always thought that the mouse in Windows always felt clunky. It never felt like it was part of the operating system. It always felt to me, and even to this day, it feels like it's been slapped on there to give you a way to maneuver around Windows. But it doesn't feel intuitive like the Mac OS X or the classic Mac mouse did.
Well, you know, some of these laptops that are out right now, it really surprises me that the MacBook Pro hasn't had more of a strong following and kind of the multi-platform cross-platform, because you go out to buy a Sony Vaio, you're spending the same, if not more, money than you would on a MacBook Pro. You're getting less features, and you're really getting this device that's kind of like a Swiss Army knife, especially if you got the big model. You know, if you got the one that looks like a super tanker that you put in a suitcase, that thing has more stuff coming out of it. It's like can opener, you know, the nipple trackpad device with the nipple, the trackpad, the three buttons. You know, I can't figure out why anybody would even buy it if they were making a hardware decision.
Wait a minute, that nipple was a mouse, a cursor button?
Yeah,
oh, I was doing something wrong. Jeez, I thought it tasted funny.
Oh God!
You know, they sell nipple replacements too.
Well,
I can't figure out. You know, I've seen a bunch of them now with the green nipple, and you know, that's interesting.
So
it's, you know, it's like we were talking about before we went live about the transition between and jobs coming in. And the divergent product lines, where we had all these Macs, the Performas and the Classics and the, you know, the PowerPC line, and you had all of these weird model numbers with a slash and something that meant something. And I think at some point we had, you know, the number was as high as like 60 units shipping.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, when you have 60 product codes, it's pretty amazing to think that, you know, now not only do the Mac faithful give Jobs credit for iMac, which was, you know, he was there for the last month, I think, while they put the plastics on. But they also are, I think, kind of leaving out that whole good, better, best, which came out of the Gil Emilio days. It's kind of, you know, it's actually kind of interesting, because Apple requires a cult leader to stay alive at all times.
Hmm.
If you don't have a cult leader, you really don't have Apple computer. I mean, for God's sakes, I do have an Apple logo tattooed on my ankle. I know what I'm talking about.
So how long did you...
I drank the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. And it was rainbow colored.
It was, you know. And I was at Apple after the drug of the day policy had already expired.
What did you do at Apple?
I actually did everything from... I started there doing QA for network products, and then went on to do some stuff in what was our server team, which was the first team that Jobs killed when he came back to Apple. When I say server team, what I mean is those giant boxes that we called the Shiner, which were the refrigerator-like AIX boxes that looked like a cross between a small portable refrigerator and R2-D2.
Yep.
So that was officially, I think, the first product that Steve Jobs killed when he came back. And I was one of about 7 people in our organization which survived to go on and do other things. And at the time, those other things became networking products and driver development. And one day, Ellen Hancock and a good friend of mine, Bert Dahlheit, summoned me to go to Exodus Communications, which was the company that Ellen had run off to when Jobs gave her the boot. And I say boot very, very nicely, because I think that Jobs did an interesting transition there, considering now that where is Avi? Is Avi now at Telme? And Ruby is going off to do other things as well, or has already gone off to do other things as well?
I think he's in semi-retirement. I don't know if he's actually doing anything. My understanding was that he's just taking time off before he makes his next move.
Well, he's probably got enough money stockpiled to not have to think about it.
Yeah, I would imagine.
It is scary, though, to think that now, you know, the soft organization at Apple is going to be run by Bertrand, I'm guessing. Or Bertrand was probably already running it anyway. But, you know, now Avi is officially gone to a company that's already in the middle of a lawsuit. It's
yeah, but that's pretty much the norm nowadays, I would think. Everybody sues everybody nowadays.
I'm really excited about some of the stuff that's coming out of Apple. I'm a little bit less enthused about where the next revision of the software is going to come in and when all these bugs are going to get fixed from the Intel transition.
Wheels of Zeus was a big news item for many, many years. Didn't quite come out the way that I'm sure that you envisioned. And it's my understanding that in many respects, the whole Wheels of Zeus project, idea, concept, company, a lot of that was your idea, not Steve Wozniak's.
That's probably fair. Started Wheels of Zeus, it actually was not called Wheels of Zeus. I want to make that really clear. It was called Cop Detector. Cop Detector was a great prank project that I started just after I left Exodus. And the concept, and anyone who's listening to this podcast that is looking for a great business idea, that wants to go have some fun and really annoy the crap out of the kind of complacent many, go off and finish Cop. Cop Detector was a project where we were taking the AVL, the automatic vehicle locator signals, off of police cars. And these signals are basically the GPS information about where am I, and taking them off of the local repeater networks and decoding them and receiving them and then displaying the exact position of every police car on your in-car GPS in real time.
Oh, jeez.
So this was the ultimate speeding ticket avoidance system. Yeah. And we had made it pretty far down the path when I made two very, very critical mistakes. The first critical mistake was timing, which was that it was around the June-July time frame of 2001. The second big mistake was that when I went to go show this to Steve, I told Steve, look, I'm working on this thing. It's called Cop Detector. It's really cool. Would you take a look at it? You know, I want to go off and put these things into mass production so that you could basically have them as a user installable or hot shop installable item. And we even had a cool revenue model, which was that we would sell you database updates every month for the database of frequencies that the police cars used for their AVL systems. So that every month we would basically send this to your phone and send it to the in-car receiver. So wherever you were, you would always have the latest and greatest data that would show you exactly where every police car was. And we went off and we met with someone who was a friend of mine from the, I don't know if you guys remember MetroWorks in the Code Warrior days.
Sure, absolutely.
Greg Galanos. And Greg Galanos had become a venture capitalist. And anytime somebody becomes a venture capitalist, they are no longer human. I want to state this very clearly. Your friends are not your friends when they become venture capitalists. And we have this amazing cocktail napkin discussion where Waz and I sat down at a coffee shop in Los Gatos and asked for Greg's advice. And we said, Greg, we need to go raise $20 million. Here's what we want to do. What do you think? And Greg says, this is great, but you don't need $20 million. What you need is $6.5 million. And we had some very, very big kind of heavy hitters that were very good at doing R&D budgets involved in the project already. And we said, well, Greg, you know, look, we really think we do need $20 million to go build these cop detectors. So Greg says, no. You need 6.5, and if you need 20, we'll come back in round B and we'll give you another 13. We said, well, who's we? And he says, well, SoftBank. So he scribbles this out literally on a cocktail napkin and says, we could do 6.5. He says, do you have a business plan? No, we don't have a business plan. Well, what do you have? Well, we have some cool working stuff. It's kind of on the way, and, you know, we really want to get started here as quickly as we can. Oh, okay, great. Well, you don't have a business plan. Do you have, like, a pitch? How about a PowerPoint slide? No. No, we were kind of working on making it work. Oh, no problem. So he sends over four SoftBank minions. They're like the underlings of the venture capital world. And they wrote our business plan for us, and then they taught us. They locked us in Waz's garage. They taught us how to pitch them back their own PowerPoint slides. And is it any wonder that at the SoftBank board meeting where this was presented, it was unanimously funded by all the members of SoftBank just before they changed their name to Mobius.
Who would have thought?
And, of course, they used Waz's name as the mechanism for people to, you know, raise awareness for what Mobius Venture Capital was, because no one had ever heard the name before Wheels of Zeus.
Mm-hmm.
So, Cop Detector died on September 11th of 2001.
Yeah.
And Wheels of Zeus was born on September the 13th. Amidst a whole flurry of us all sitting around in a garage going, well, what do we call it, and what do we do, and what is it? And it was the first business model that I think has ever been created by a venture capital company, because they decided what we were going to do, and they agreed to fund it.
Interesting.
So Wheels of Zeus was definitely born out of Cop Detector, and Wheels of Zeus was actually named by Waz because we were so tired of trying to come up with a name. We were on the table tossing names out there, and somebody said, well, let's name the company after Steve. And Steve said, I don't think we should call it Waz. Let's make it an acronym, let's make it something interesting. So we're tossing out names, and people were coming up with stuff that was as bad as Where in Oz. That was the worst one, I think. And Wheels of Zeus came out of Steve's mouth, and I basically jumped up and said, I second it. That's a great name. Can we go on now? And I really thought I was joking at the time, but nobody else did. So all of a sudden, we were named Wheels of Zeus. And by the way, Wheels of Zeus, I'm not sure what the total number was, but I think that they actually did end up raising and spending almost $20 million.
Wow.
Mm. Although I could be wrong on that, but I can't be shot for saying it in any case at this point.
It's my understanding that cell phones should be very wary of you if you're in your Hummer.
I don't know about that.
especially if you're trying to return one that's broken.
Oh, God. Yeah, I did. I had a couple of, you know, the dot-com days, I think, ruined everybody, because everybody during the late 90s and early 2000s were all dot-com millionaires. I mean, we had to be. What else were we going to do with the stock? I'd go to work in the morning and go, wow, the stock's up 9 points. That's great. I made $1 million today. Okay, great. You know, what do we do now? And I decided at some point that I was going to pick up the dot-com arrogance that had inspired so many, and I switched from going from the last of the analog Motorola Vader phones to the very first digital Vader phone, which was, this really cool little CDMA phone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And when the guy delivered it, he made me give up my last analog Vader phone for it, and this thing was a complete piece of junk. So I called him up. I said, look, I just want my analog phone back. You can take this thing. Just give me back my analog cell phone. Nope, I can't do it. Well, why not? Well, because you already bought it, and the return policy says that, you know, you can't just return the digital phone for anything but a digital phone. So, you know, I just told him, and I had about 15 or 20 phones with him at the time. I said, look, come up to my house right now. I had one of those moments of just, I want. He showed up at the house, and I told him, does this thing have a warranty? And he says, yeah, you've got the replacement plan on it. I told him, so what happens when it breaks? He says, I have to give you a new one. So I put it under the front tire of my Hummer, and I backed up over it and grounded into the ground several times and pulled up over it and swept it into an envelope and handed him the envelope and told him, now give me another one so I can do it to that one, too. You won't believe it. He gave me my analog cell phone back.
Yeah, surprise.
For a second there, I was worried that you were going to ask me about driving around the neighborhood with the cell phone repeater in the trunk or the cell phone jammers.
No, we wouldn't want to ask that one.
Oh, thank God.
Especially in this post 9/11 world. So I understand that, how can I phrase this? That you get cravings for Big Boy, even though they're not close by, and you and Steve Wozniak were just...
Thing? What is this?
Yeah. It's the 2020 interview.
I get cravings for Big Boy. Now, this is really taking it too far, guys. You said you weren't going to talk about my... I mean...
so, So I take it that obviously you hang around with Steve Wozniak quite a bit.
He's one of my best friends on planet Earth. He's hysterically funny and brilliant at the same time.
Is it strange to know that you're such good friends with someone who literally changed the world? I mean, does that concept really sink in sometimes?
Oh, yesterday, or the day before, we went out and we bought, Steve went out and bought a couple of these TomTom 910s. And one of them crashed. I looked at Steve and I said, "It's all your fault." And he says, "Well, yeah, I guess so." I mean, you know, you have to figure out what started and who created these technological problems in our lives. And, you know, it's really kind of interesting because I think of Steve as just another guy who's extremely brilliant and was responsible for a revolution. But I think that we know each other well enough to where a lot of the shock and awe is something that he gets to use on other people as this, anytime you bump into Woz and he's with a group of people who are meeting him for the first time, he'll start to tell them things that are absolutely preposterous, but they believe him.
Because it's who he is, yeah.
It's Woz, yeah. I mean, it's like you're in court with the king. And he tells you that, you know, one of the first knots that he told me when I met him was, "Have you ever heard of dwarf stretching?" And I, dwarf stretching, he starts to explain to me the concept, but he changes it a little bit, and he says, "Well, you know Manute Bol, right?" I said, "Well, no, but you know what's the concept here?" He says, "Well, Manute Bol was 7'7", but they had to use dwarf stretching on to get him to 8 feet tall, but now he can't fly commercial." I looked at him, and I was like, "What?" And he says, "Yeah, come on, you know about dwarf stretching. It's where they break every kind of limb, and then they insert these screws, and, you know, the dwarfs have to get up every morning and give them a little bit of a turn so that their limbs will grow." Now, it's real popular, especially with rock stars and stuff. So I'm like, "This is bullshit." So about 2 years later, I'm sitting down watching the Discovery Channel, and my girlfriend, you know, is flicking through the channels, and here's one with these dwarfs. And they have their limbs broken in multiple places, and they have these screw bars giving them a quarter turn so that they can gain, you know, the bone grafts itself and they grow.
Mm-hmm.
And I called Steve up at 1 a.m., and I'm like, "God damn it, dwarf stretching is real." And he says, "Well, yeah, of course, I told you." For the record, I do not think Manute Bol is 8 feet tall, and I'm pretty sure he can fly commercial.
I don't know. Manute Bol is pretty darn tall. Well,
Steve
is he still
up
alive?
With a new one every week, and he'll try it out. I was actually dating and living with my CTO, my now CTO's daughter, for a while, and I get this phone call from my CTO Dan Sokol in the middle of the night, and he says, "Alex," and he's been really short with me all week. "Alex, I know." I told him, "You know what? You know, I'm sitting in bed. It's late at night." He says, "I know." I said, "Okay, you know what?" He says, "Alex, just don't play with me. You know that I know." I said, "I have no idea what you're talking about. What are you talking about?" He says, "I know that Grace," his daughter, "is pregnant." And I hit the mute button. "Grace, are you pregnant?" "No." I unmute the phone. "I got to call you back." So I clicked. I just hung up on him. Mm-hmm. The first person I called was. And I said, "You bastard, you told Dan that Grace is pregnant?" And he's laughing hysterically. He says, "No." "I told one of Dan's friends that Grace was pregnant and not to tell Dan." So of course we had so much fun with him after that, because when I hung up, he was convinced it was true. So, you know, now, for weeks and weeks, we're talking about what we're going to paint the baby's room, and, you know, maybe we're going to name it after him. And, you know, that's all thanks to Woz. He really had an amazing, amazing effect. He told me once when my ex and I were arguing, he said, "You know what you should do? You should marry her and then divorce her. It's simpler than breaking up."
Yeah, actually, it probably is.
He's very, very, you know, he's very persuasive. Not many people realize that.
Have you ever thought about creating your own podcast?
Oh God, no! What would I talk about?
We've got about 29 minutes right now of material that is just probably scratching the surface.
Well, I know when you cut it down, it's going to be 9 minutes.
We don't cut down.
Now, there's going to be the Easter Bunny, my ex-girlfriend not pregnant, and the Newt Bowl being 8 foot tall, being dwarf stretched.
That's right.
Which for some reason feature now very, very vividly.
That somehow Steve Jobs takes all the credit for.
I'm openly and admittedly not a huge Steve Jobs fan. I even got quoted in his biography. Times that I was at Apple, we would send each other emails that ranged from rant to just the occasional FU. And, you know, he's brilliant, but God, there are certain things that you would think would be negotiable that are not necessarily negotiable, such as when somebody's right or wrong, what that's based on. And I'm happy to say that from the time that he told me that with an attitude like mine I should leave Apple to the time that I quit was a good 8 months. And had Alan Hancock not had a lot of persuasive ability at the time, I probably would be locked in some office at Apple right now with handcuffs on, looking at the wall and pacing back and forth. You know, I mean, me and Burl Smith would probably be in the same institution at this point.
Where do you see yourself 10 years from now?
What do I think about what?
Where do you see yourself 10 years from now?
Well, I hope on a, you know, tropical island somewhere with 12 beautiful, you know, Jamaican women fanning me, feeding me peeled grapes while I, you know, play on my latest MacBook Pro. But isn't that everybody's dream?
Yeah, well, I guess it depends on your persuasion. Some people would say 12 Jamaican men, but, you know...
Well, the problem is, you know, by the time I get to that 10-year mark, Avi and John and Fred Anderson and, you know, the Google guys, they will have bought up all the available islands. I'll probably have to share a place with Gordon Moore or something. I mean, it's gonna be horrible. All the good spots are going to get taken. Heck, I saw, you know, Waz had me run an errand for him about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was to pick up the Segway. And I said, well, sure, I'll pick up the Segway. Where is it? He says, well, it's going to be at San Jose Jet Center tonight at 11 o'clock. What's it doing at San Jose Jet Center? Well, Sergey's flying at home on his jet. Now, you know, I knew Sergey back at Exodus because we hosted everybody on planet Earth. I mean, you know, 5.1 million square feet of raised floor and 47 data centers. There weren't too many people we didn't host.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you get to the airport and here's Sergey and his new... I'm hoping rented Gulfstream G5 and his limo on the runway waiting for him. I'm thinking back to the Google days, going, wow, a lot's changed.
Yeah.
A lot has changed from the dot-com days when everybody was rich and Google was poor to the post-dot-com days where all the dot-comers are broke and Google is rich. It's really amazing.
I think this is more of the dot-com days than before, don't you? Because before, everybody had an idea and got rich off the idea, but nothing ever came to fruition. Whereas now, it's very small development teams actually creating things that work and work phenomenally well before money even enters into the equation. So to me, this is the real dot-com days.
Well, it has to be, because the venture capitalists are all Nazis now. I mean, these guys, not that they weren't before, but... the return on investment they want and the revenue stream that they want to acquire when they invest. The term early stage investor is now, early stage investors are basically angel investors, and angel investors are investing larger quantities of money in startup companies, I think, now than most VC firms are.
Hmm.
Especially from that standpoint of, I'm a startup company and I want to go raise $500K to, you know, up to $3.5 million. Well, now... You can find a group of angels who will give you that $3.5 million with a good enough plan and a good enough team to go execute. Where in the venture capital space, you might be able to go find that type of startup money for round A, but it's going to come with a price that includes, you know, your firstborn child and up to 40% of the company.
You're just telling me I'm never going to be rich, aren't you?
No, I'm just saying, you know, it's a venture capitalist.
If somebody wants to learn more about Alex, where are they going to go on the internet to learn more about you?
Well, you can go to www.waz.org/Alex or ripcord.com, and you can navigate back best do from there. Although I get the feeling if you keep your ears posted for the next couple of weeks, we are going to be having our first big Ripcord hurrah announcement, which is a big win for us.
Cool.
Well, we're definitely looking forward to seeing that, Alex, and we really want to thank you for coming on to the podcast and talking to us.
Hey, thank you guys so much for having me, and hopefully somebody will go out there and build that cop detector and maybe make it a plug-in for my TomTom.
Yeah. I'm waiting for someone to build a GPS into the iPod. That's what I'm waiting for.
You know, I wonder if Big Brother would like that very much.
Who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't really matter.
Doesn't really matter.
What a great way to keep track of it.
Well, I gave this idea a couple weeks ago, laser tag with iPods, and you track each other via GPS on the screen.
You know, that would be really, really cool, especially if you could throw your iPod at somebody you're playing laser tag with.
There's some really great cases out there that would probably allow you to do that.
Yeah, I saw a couple of them. Very, very nice. Yeah. No, I agree with you. That would be fun.
Well, it was nice talking to you, Alex. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast today.
Thanks so much for having me. You guys take care.
You too.
I'm 1,000 miles away from my multi-million dollar recording studio, so please bear with me if my dulcet tones are not quite as mellifluous as my talented colleagues Robert and Guy on the MyMac.com podcast, because reviews you can use that won't make you snooze is taking itself on the road for a few weeks. While we're traveling, of course, we take our iPods with us, and there's a company called Casemate, or case-mate.net, that has a patriotic line of iPod cases for the new iPod Video and the iPod Nano. We will have in our show notes a link to this particular page on the World Wide Web. The Patriot line of iPod cases comes in either red, white, and blue to help you celebrate this week's 4th of July holiday, or camouflage if you want to make sure you can't be found while you're sneaking through the jungles of Macintoshiana with your various iPod Nanos and iPod Videos. I'm holding in my hand the full-size, beautiful Napa leather, stars and stripes case for the iPod Video. When you obtain this case, it comes with a nice little plastic cover section to cover your iPod to keep it from getting scratched on the front elements, and also a dainty little cleaning cloth to wipe off your fingerprints. But the case itself from Casemate or case-mate.net is very well constructed. It comes with a belt clip that is not quite as robust as I would like, but it will work under most circumstances. There's a hole in the bottom so you can connect your dock connector. There's the typical wheel and viewing area that are exposed, which is why you need to have the plastic cover pieces to protect them from fingerprints and scratches. As I said, it's very nicely made out of leather, very colorful. You will definitely make a fashion as well as a patriotic statement, and proceeds from the sale of this do go to support the USO, which helps military people in service. When you click the Buy Now link on the Casemate site, it tells you that for $25 or $30, depending on the size, they will ship this unit to you with no charge for a UPS ground in the domestic 48 United States. The case fits the iPod very, very snugly. I'm totally pleased with it. I'm getting lots of compliments and comments. I guess I wish I had the camouflage, perhaps, but for the 4th of July, the patriotic model is absolutely the one to have. Highest recommendation, except the belt clip could be a little more sturdy, but please go to casemate.net to see what they have. Thanks for listening to MyMac.com podcast, reviews you can use that won't make you snooze. Have a happy holiday. John Nemo signing off.
And it's Chad and I. It's our turn to play with our new computers, Chad.
Yep.
Chad is in the process. He couldn't wait, you know. Mm-hmm. He's Mr. Impatient over here. He has broken out his new MacBook. Chad got a white MacBook. And initial impressions as you're... Or what are you doing over here? Okay, he's...
taking my registration.
Registration, you know. So he gets six free issues of Macworld or something like that. Initial impressions, Chad. You're using it. It's sitting in your lap. What do you think so far?
Nice. Very nice.
I noticed the number one. It looks really, really different than the iBook. The iBook looks so dated when you look at it right next to this new MacBook Chad's typing right now. What do you think? Okay, first, as you're sitting there typing, what do you think of that? The chiclet keys and the way they stick up and they're separated like that.
That's nice.
Do you like them?
Yeah, the feel on these things is fantastic.
I noticed the trackpad is huge on that thing.
Yeah, this is about at least half or two-thirds, again, as large as the one that's on my old G3 MacBook.
It's, I would say that's probably larger than the one on my... Oh, it's the same size as the one on my MacBook Pro, but it's larger than my G4 PowerBook. So I don't know why they went with a larger trackpad, but I kind of like the idea.
Yeah.
Are you at all worried about that thing turning yellow, as we've seen news reports?
I'm not sure yet.
No. It hasn't happened yet.
Let me get my picture in here. Oh. Take a picture of me.
Uh-oh. Look at that. During the registration process now, which is new to me and Chad, it actually will take your picture using the built-in EyeSight camera. So it's taking his piece, he's taking his own picture using the EyeSight camera in the MacBook, and that will be the picture you use for your account.
I look maniacal.
Well, that's normal, though. So that's, at least we'll know it's yours.
Yeah,
I could talk some about the MacBook Pro, but honestly, it's not a whole lot different than my PowerBook G4. Not really. I'm looking forward to the MagLock, obviously, because I need that. Weight-wise, it feels about exactly the same as my PowerBook G4. It's slightly longer in width than my PowerBook G4. Not a whole lot. Just, you know, maybe a couple thumbnails worth tops. It looks a little bit thinner, but other than that, I mean, they look identical, almost. I mean,
yeah.
There really isn't that much of a difference. Mm-hmm. I haven't booted mine up all the way yet because I am going to transfer information from my PowerBook G4 over to the MacBook Pro using the
data migration utility.
That's right. All you got to do is hook up these Macs via FireWire. And it will suck the information out of my PowerBook, and basically my new MacBook Pro will act just like my PowerBook did, so I won't miss a beat. Although I probably will spend the next couple days upgrading a lot of the stuff on it to, you know, Intel dual binary software. So Chad's still playing with he's you can so tell Chad has a new toy because he's completely ignoring me and the microphone.
I'm sorry,
Tim. And he's playing with his MacBook. I keep wanting to say MacBook Pro, but that's a MacBook. What do you think of the glossy screen so far?
Nice. A lot nicer than I thought it would be. I thought it'd be a distraction, but actually, once you fire this thing up and you look at it, there's no reflection in here.
Does it seem bright,
yes.
The screen?
Yep.
Why don't you stick it up there so I can see it too? Hog.
Okay.
Yeah, hog. My initial impression is the screen seems short.
Yeah.
But long.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like that. Boy, it's telling you, you've got like a couple hundred megabytes worth of software to update, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You only got a half charge on your battery, though, so I would suggest plugging it in before you start upgrading everything.
Yeah. I'm going to stop. I'm just going to quit right now and close it down. But
you know, looking at it as it's running, I can't tell that it even has a glossy screen, except it seems to have more depth.
Mm-hmm.
The background seems to have more depth than I'm used to.
Right.
Especially going from your iBook.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty slick, I gotta say. I really like this computer. It's small. It's definitely lighter than the MacBook Pro.
And the iBook. So.
And the iBook, definitely. My MacBook Pro is lighter than your iBook. It's a nice-looking machine. Mm-hmm. It's obviously, it's not a sub-notebook, but it kind of reminds me of that type of a computer with a widescreen format. What mm-hmm. I'd really like to see is like a DVD being played in there. I bet that would look pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I already have a PowerBook G4, and going to from that to the MacBook Pro, I'm sure there's going to be a huge difference in speed,
mm-hmm.
but it looks so much the same. What I really like about that MacBook is it doesn't have that clasp that you have to push in a button to open the lid.
Nope.
It just goes down and closes, and you just lift it up to open it. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. We did get some feedback. Let me shuffle my computers around over here a little bit. We did get some feedback on my question concerning the MacBook Pro and going that route. I thought my PowerBook G4 crashed on me, which would be very rare. Mm-hmm. And I said this before, I'm very leery of going from this PowerBook G4 to the MacBook, because this PowerBook G4 has been, and this is saying something for me,
mm-hmm.
the most reliable computer I've ever had.
Mm.
I've never, ever had a problem with this computer, ever. Mm. And I don't know if I want to sell it, or I don't know if I want to hold on to it for a while. It's just, it's one of those things. I really like this computer.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to play with the MacBook Pro for a little while before I make the decision whether I want to get rid of the PowerBook or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because quite honestly, if the MacBook Pro is just too hot for the way I use my G4 now,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to sell the MacBook Pro and I'm going to keep this machine, the PowerBook, until mm-hmm. something else comes out.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make more money selling the MacBook Pro, obviously, right. than I would the PowerBook. But I want the speed, so mm-hmm. I'm hoping that everything's great with the MacBook Pro and yeah. I don't have anything to worry about. This actually came in today from Mike Erickson, and he wrote, Tim, last February I bought one of the first MacBook Pros, the 1.8 GHz model. I previously had a 17-inch PowerBook 1.3 GHz, and the performance jump is impressive when using universal apps and noticeable with other apps. I don't use Photoshop CS2, but I do use Photoshop Elements 4, and while it takes about 30 seconds to load, once Elements is up and running, it is very quick, and I also use Office 2004, and noticed just a slight lag when loading. And finally, going from the 17-inch PowerBook to the 15-inch MacBook Pro screen was no problem. The 15.4 resolution is the same, 14,000 by 900 pixels, as my old 17-inch. Also, I sold my PowerBook to Mac of all trades for $1,300, so it just about paid for the MacBook Pro. That's always nice when yeah. you get something better and you don't really have to pay a lot more.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Here's another one. This is from Andy Williams, and he says, just listen to your recent podcast when you are contemplating upgrading to a MacBook Pro but wondering how using Photoshop ran compared to your current Power Mac.
Mm-hmm. I'm a professional graphic designer, and I too was concerned about upgrading from my older Power Mac G4 900 MHz Quicksilver model to the Intel chip, knowing the Adobe Creative Suite 2 apps would be running in Rosetta. I purchased a 2 GHz MacBook Pro a few months back and never looked back. Photoshop, Illustrator, and InDesign all run flawlessly, and the speed is very comparable, if not better, than my older 900 MHz PowerPC Mac. I'm totally happy with the speed and compatibility. At work, I was running an even older Power Mac running at 400 MHz. No comparison there. Rosetta runs circles around that old machine.
I can imagine.
The only bug that I can see is with InDesign. All the sizes and numbers in the dialog boxes have incredibly long decimal places. For instance, in the page setup dialog box, I can type 8.5 inches for the width of the page, but it gets replaced with something like 8.500500505 inches. Likewise, with using the control palette for sizing objects or setting the XY coordinates. For example, I drew a box in a page and the size is 1.73473473473375 wide by blah 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 about 12 digits. This doesn't appear to be causing any problems design-wise, including creating final PDF files or printing to an image setter. Just a little annoying visually for me. I have heard of problems using Adobe version Q with Intel Macs, but I don't use it and would suggest not even installing it if you don't plan on needing it. Keep up the good work on the podcast, and that's from Adam Williams.
And Adam was one of our Office 2004 winners from a while back.
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah, we talked to him on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Interesting. And it's obviously I already made my decision, but I got his email before I made that decision. Yeah. So I'm looking for a little bit. It makes my decision of buying one an easier one. So this was, you remember when we were talking about what do we do with all this extra RAM?
Yep.
This is an email we got
from Joseph Elizondo. And Joe writes, you were talking about how useless 256 RAM is, but it can prove to be useful. Heck, if you don't need it, I sure do. If you have a Power Mac, you usually have 4 slots, sometimes more. We are not like you and put 4 gig chips in those slots.
Granted, but it wasn't just... I wasn't talking about just the Power Macs. I'm talking about, for instance, your MacBook Pro. Right. If you want to upgrade that, you have to toss out the memory that's in there. Yep. There isn't another slot that you can use for the older memory.
Mm-hmm. He goes on to say, if I had 2 512s, 2 more 256s would give me a gig and a half of RAM. I have an eMac with a 512 stick and a Mac Mini with a 256 stick. Add 2 by 256 to the eMac and 512 to the Mini, and all of a sudden I can run Final Cut Pro on the Mini. Not all people find 256K chips or Mag chips useless. As for MacWorld, you should look around on eBay for some... for a buck.
But, yeah, that's the MacWorld magazines.
Yep.
It's interesting that, yeah, obviously 256 meg chip isn't useless to everybody.
Right.
It is if you've only got one computer or you got multiple computers, but none of the other ones can use that chip, then it's basically useless. But I still think it's a problem that you have this extra memory.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
Or anything that you can do with it.
Right.
Wouldn't it be cool if someone came up with an external device that could plug into a FireWire port that can hold extra RAM slots?
Hmm.
And that the Mac could access that?
Yeah, you know, if it wasn't too bulky, you could do it.
Yeah, but it'd have to be an enclosed because memory gets extremely hot when it's in use. But could that work? I don't know if the FireWire bus, quite honestly, is fast enough for memory, for RAM.
Yeah.
But, man, it just seems like somebody could do something with this RAM.
Mm-hmm.
An excess RAM people have just laying around. There's got to be something that somebody can do with it.
Yeah.
You know? Not just if, you know, some people do have an extra slot that could use that extra RAM. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's what eBay's for. That's why you sell it on eBay, and someone buys it dirt cheap off of eBay, and boom, yeah, they go from 1 gig to 1.5 gigs.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. That it hooks someone up really great that way.
Sure.
And you could probably pick it up dirt cheap there.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the person that has the extra RAM? Yeah, they can get next to nothing for it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like you could use it for something. I don't know what. I'm not smart enough. I'm not an engineer. It just seems like it's a waste, and I hate that. I don't like wasting something like that.
Right.
So, Chad and I have opened up our new portables, and, man, you know, I'm looking at Chad's MacBook sitting right on top of his iBook, and it looks tiny next to it. Mm-hmm. It looks... Well, you're looking from the front. If you look over here from the side, you'll really see a huge difference.
Oh, wow, I didn't realize it was that much
shorter. Yeah, it's shorter, it's thinner, it's... Wow, there's a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to finding out how warm these things really get.
Yeah.
And the speed and playing with the EyeSight camera.
Mm-hmm.
And Chad said, what's this thing? And he's pointing to the EyeSight camera. Is that a microphone? I went, no, that's your EyeSight camera. And he went, oh, cool. He forgot that there was an EyeSight built into the...
Totally
forgot about it.
That one.
But you got to say something the way Apple boxes up their products, you know? Designed and, you know... That's designed by Apple Computer and... The boxes themselves are a lot smaller than they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, that's our podcast for this week. We will be back next week. Who do we have on schedule? Do we have anybody on schedule?
We don't have anybody on schedule this week.
Which is surprising because we almost always have someone on schedule.
Yeah.
We didn't have anybody this week either, which is cool that Alex could come on and be on the podcast. He was having some computer problems, and that's why we did the interview with Alex via cell phone.
Yep.
It would have sounded a lot better in Skype, but what an interesting guy.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we'll get to meet him in MacWorld Expo San Francisco this January. If you own a company and you have a lot of money to burn, Chad and I are looking for sponsors for the MacWorld Expo. Seriously.
Yep.
We're looking for airfare, cash in our pockets so we can eat. and that we can cover the money that we lose from our actual day jobs while we're there. So if your company would like to sponsor us, please send an email to tim@mymac.com.
Or leave us a message on our Skype, which is 1-801-938-5559.
Yeah, see, you brought the number up. I was like, it sounds like he's going to forget it there for a minute. Why would he bring it up if he doesn't even know what it is?
I remember.
Yeah, you remembered. Have a good week. We'll see you guys a week from today. And send us an email.
Yep. See you.
Bye.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.